Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Success Solutions Live. I'm your co-host, Robert Browning. The purpose of the show is to share programs that grow organizations, teams, and people to their full potential. Our guests are a mix of business leaders, successful authors, speakers, and content experts. Our co-host is Fred Parrish, founder and CEO of The Profit Experts and The Profit Beacon Software. How are you today, Fred?
Great, Robert. Thanks.
It's great to have you on. This is going to be the first in a series of shows where Fred's company is actually also sponsoring this show. And I'm extremely excited today about the title of the show and our guest. And we have with us today Burke Franklin. How are you, Burke?
Hey, Robert. Good. Thanks for having me.
I'll read a little bit first, and then we'll get right into this because we want to leave people with some great actionable stuff to help their business. And today's show is entitled Conscious Business Strategies to Grow Profit, Fine-Tuning Your Purpose and What That Really Means. And we're going to dig in with that today with Burke and with Fred. And Burke Franklin is the creator and CEO of Business Power Tools, best known for Biz Plan Builder software, which sold more than 2 million copies. Quote, it's crucial that your innovations succeed in our world. This means that your business must be profitable and sustainable without you losing control, your mind, and your shirt, Burke says. A graduate of UC Santa Barbara, is an entrepreneur with marketing and management experience for more than 40 years. His idea of changing the world is providing the business tools you need to help you change the world. Burke was elected to the White House Conference on Small Business and has been nominated for Ernst & Young's Entrepreneur of the Year. Burke's book, Business Black Belt, applies lessons from 37 years of personal development workshops, martial arts, flying, and real-world business success to building companies. Please help me welcome Burke Franklin. And
there's supposed
Fred,
to be some kind of applause track with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was thinking of that while you were...
something.
I know, Fred. Fred was going to start off the show today with a question, and then we'll just work through this, and we're going to have some fun here.
Yeah, that's great, Robert. Yeah, I guess, Burke, why don't we just start with explaining what a conscious business really is?
Yeah, I hear that a lot. People talk about conscious. I have a conscious business, and what they mean by that is they're giving money away to certain groups or whatever. And so conscious business and mindfulness, I think, is the other word. Consciousness almost sounds too much like it was figured out in a hot tub in Northern California with people smoking weed, and it's really not. I mean, I think of consciousness, at least the so-called consciousness that I practiced for many years or learned and really adopted and realized this is important to me. And I think of it as it's the practice of eliminating inaccurate beliefs, enabling clearer perception of reality, leading to more effective action. What does that mean? You know, so people could argue, well, inaccurate beliefs, well, that's what beliefs are, because they're beliefs. There's no basis, you know, for them, they just believe. But really, I think of, you hear the story of the baby elephant. They tie a baby elephant to a stick in the ground, and it pulls and pulls and pulls on it and says, I can't get away. I'm just going to stand here, you know, and that's what they do. And then they grow into a gigantic elephant that could, you know, walk away with a drag a car down the street. And they still tie the big elephant to that little stick in the ground. The elephant looks over and looks at it and goes, nah, I never could pull that thing. I'm going to stand here. And that's what psychologists call learned helplessness. And so I think of those, the consciousness is the practice of eliminating your learned helplessness so you have a clearer perception of reality leading to more effective action. Does that make sense? I don't want it to be sounding too woo-woo because I think of there is some woo-woo. I think of like applied woo-woo that does work in the world. We have a lot of power as people. We just are perhaps perceiving things inaccurately, and if we were to straighten our thinking out, we could be more effective and successful.
Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense, Berg. Thanks for that.
Yeah, in your case, you guys talk about profit. and understanding how to understand to profit your business and like that, you know, just talking to your product, for example, in that case, consciousness, being conscious of the flow of money in your business. You're aware of it. You know how it works. You see the reality of it. You're not all wound up like, oh, no, I'm not making any money. Oh, God, what does that mean? I'm going to die. You know, no, you get what needs to be done, and you take action because you've got a clear perception of what's really going on. Sorry to interrupt.
Right, yep. Exactly. No, that was great. Perfect.
Yeah, and it reminds me of some of the classic quotes you get over the years, like Earl Nightingale, you are what you think about, and it's that whole power of belief that you have in your core, some of which you have to overcome. But I was just wondering, Rick,
yes,
why is personal purpose so important?
Well, as you asked that, I am seeing a lot of emails lately about people offering courses on how to learn what's your purpose. Your purpose is important. How to figure out what your purpose is. You know, and then Buckminster Fuller would say, if you see a problem to fix, it's yours to fix. So in a way, that can become your purpose. You see something needs to be done, get doing it, you know, and so, or find somebody who is and work with them, something like that. So purpose, there's another kind of a thing that would go with it as well, because I talk about a distinction in building a business, and I talk about this in Business Plan Builder, where people are ostensibly writing a business plan because they're going to pitch investor because they need capital. And ideally, I'd like them to be able to build a business without needing outside money, or at least do as much as you can until you do. But in there somewhere, I also ask them, I talk about the distinction between being a missionary and being a mercenary. And so your purpose as this missionary, so to speak, is you've seen a problem in the world, you realize, here's this problem in the world, and I happen to be a person uniquely qualified, positioned, whatever, to do something about it. And I think that's we talk about find a hole and fill it, is one of the entrepreneurial things that, you think about it, that, I can do this. I'm going to do this thing. And so that becomes your purpose. And the way a purpose isn't something that just sort of lands on you like, I'm looking for my purpose. What should my purpose be? Purpose is also something you consciously choose to make your purpose. Okay. Now consciously choose. I know many doctors who become doctors because unconsciously back in their childhood, somebody died, somebody got hurt. And they're thinking, I'm gonna grow up and be a doctor, and I'm gonna save people with that, which is great. That become their purpose. I say it's probably chosen unconsciously at the time. Nevertheless, that driver became their purpose. And so the mercenary versus missionary, you've got the missionary. This has to do with business and combining purpose with business. So a missionary typically says, just give me money. I'm going to go do what I want to do and fix this thing. Unfortunately, that gives investors the willies, because they're thinking, oh my God, you don't know anything about business. You're just going to spend a bunch of money. How do we get a return on investment? Hold that thought. Now we switch over to the mercenary, and the mercenary is, all about the money. Now the good news is about the mercenaries is they're usually pretty good at business. It's just that if something kind of starts to going south on the business and they see a better opportunity to make more money elsewhere, they're going to jump ship. And that gives investors the willies. So if you can combine the best of both, where you've got a missionary who's got a sense of business and how to build a profitable, sustainable company, whether it's nonprofit or for-profit, it's at least sustainable to some degree, where you're not always out begging for money, but you're building, you're solving the problem, and you're building a successful business doing it. That would be the ideal combination to me. That's where personal purpose comes in. It's like the Wizard of Oz, the Tin Man gets a heart and the Scarecrow gets a brain. You're taking your reason for doing something, whether it's becoming a doctor or inventing a medical device or just solving a problem in the world. You're realizing, how can I do this in a way where I could build a profitable company in the process? And so the purpose tells investors that you're going to stay with this thing through thick and thin, more likely than somebody who's just in it for the money. So purpose becomes really the reason behind the reason for building the business. And so you can, but for me, as a kid, I would read Popular Science and Popular Mechanics magazine. And somewhere in one of those things, I saw the 200 mile per gallon carburetor. Okay. Now, some would argue that's an urban myth. Others would argue that it's very real. My question is, what happened to it? what happens to other ideas like that? Where the hell did all these things go? Where are all these cool things that were on the cover of Popular Science magazine way back when? And I've worked for a number of companies, and I've seen that these companies failed because there's just different things got in the way of building a business around it. But I really wanted to see these innovations succeed in our world so we could use them. And so, and how could people build companies around it so those products could persist? That became my purpose. How can I do this? And I saw that, you know, I was working with these companies, and I thought, you know, if I made some software and some templates that could help people put this together and explain that and pitch it to investors, then more of these products might make it. And that's really how I would, you know, my own example of applying my own personal purpose to what I'm doing. Because really, you know, you said in my little bio there, like, you know, it's crucial that your innovations succeed in our world. Well, what I mean by that is entrepreneurs really are the ones who are going to save humanity at this point. Buckminster Fuller said in 1981 that humanity is in its final stages of its final exam. We are on the tipping point of blowing ourselves off the planet and screwing up. The good news is there's more good people than bad. The downside is, you know, look and just read the news, and it's kind of scary. But really, entrepreneurs are the ones who are going to come up with the solutions to save humanity from itself. And so I'm thinking of, we need to help more entrepreneurs do whatever you're doing to help save humanity, because we all need it. How's that for proof?
That's great, Bert. That's great. And you mentioned a few minutes ago about profitability, and that's what we at the Profit Experts focus on most of the time. So let's talk about a few conscious business strategies that might impact profitability, or really, more importantly, cash flow.
Well, you know, I went to a number of corporate sales trainings, and I wrote a number of blog pieces on sales and selling, and in the process of thinking about that. So having gone to these corporate sales trainings, one of the things they'll tell you is always be closing, close the deal. First of all, the word close, anybody who sold anything realizes that once you sell something, that's when the work really starts. Now the customer bought the thing. Oh boy, we got to deliver it, you know? And so that's one idea right there. It's, you're not closing the sale. You're really expanding the relationship, but you're agreeing to go ahead and do business, really. Anyway, the point what I wanted to get to was a lot of these sales trainings have a lot to do with overcoming objections. And how do you get past the objections and all that? And I found that for me, you know, one of the, you know, conscious things to change in my thinking was, if I'm loaded for bear in terms of I'm going to go in and I'm going to handle objections, what have I told myself? Walking in the door, these people do not want to buy. I cannot help these people. They don't want what I have. To get them to buy from me so I can make money, I must overcome their objections. Can you see the problem or the problems in that consciousness? Walking in the consciousness is the mindset that I walk in the door with. Now, if I walk in the door with a different mindset, which is these people want to buy from me. Now, I might have a bit of a challenge showing them, you know, how the thing is that I have is going to help them. But nevertheless, once they realize what I've got and how I can help them, they're going to want to buy from me. Can you see how the vibe changes? The whole energy of that approach changes everything. Now, I might walk in the door and find out that I can't help them. That's the other part of it. I'm here to help them. And I found that when I really come in the door with the real intent of, I can help you, and I really want to help you, even more than the amount of money I'm going to make doing it. So coming in with the intent to help, with the, if I can help you, you definitely want to buy from me. I mean, how many more things can I, you know, and then, you know, you sure I'm going to make money in the back end? And part of the people, I think a lot of people are freaked out about making a profit because they think, oh, me making a profit is really stealing from them. Again, another thought from childhood somewhere that someone told you that, oh, those evil people are making a big profit. They're bad. Okay, I don't want to be a bad person. Therefore, I shouldn't make a profit. If I do make a profit, I'm a bad person. You know, undo that belief, please, quickly. Because really the profit you make is the value you add, the value you bring to the party. That's the profit you deserve in this. And the more people you can help and bring more value to more people, the more profit you're going to make. And I think that's where guys like Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, you know, those guys made a lot of money because they brought a lot of, they figured a way to leverage their ability to help a lot of people with something. And so therefore they made a lot of profit. So if you see this, the 3 points right there, they, I can help people, they want to buy, and I deserve the profit on this because I'm going to help them. And the profit I make is, or the help that I give to people is far more valuable to them than the profit I make on it. Okay, so as long as I can help them and, you know, if the money they pay me, it costs me less than what they pay me to do it, that's the profit I make, we're in business.
That's a great answer, Burke. I really like that, and it kind of reminds me of The Go-Giver, if you've heard of that, by Bob Berg, that kind of takes a different look in value in the marketplace and how you have relationships that you're present to. And for some, it may sound foo-foo, but you can tell the big difference when somebody shows up and they're just not reciting something by memory. They're actually seeking to understand and fully present, engaging in a true dialogue with you. So I kind of like that thinking a great deal. And, you know, I've read your book before, The Business Black Belt, and, you know, some of this thinking is woven throughout that book, even though you're also a technology thinker kind of guy, too. What inspired you to write The Business Black Belt and that whole mindful entrepreneurial manifesto on building a conscious business? It seems to be a natural here.
Well, I think about writing another book. Cause I think and asking these questions, the answers have evolved, you know, over time. And so I read what inspired me originally. I read an article by a gentleman, and he said, you know, here's 10 ways to put yourself out of business. And I thought, really, we're going to focus on 10 ways to put myself out of business? How does that help me succeed in business? Because here's the thing, you know, and it goes on to a bigger conversation that I want to produce into a TED talk, but the idea is it's our language. And so it's kind of the negative thing. So I would say that there are an infinite number of ways to screw up. I mean, look at our lives and the mistakes we make. And we talk about learning from our mistakes. And we grow up, one of these things we learn all our lives is you learn from your mistakes. Okay, that's true. Now, has anybody talked to you about, did you learn from your successes? Have you analyzed your successes with the same rigor that you look at your mistakes? I mean, a mistake is painful, expensive, embarrassing, you know, all that, and I don't want to do that again. But does that mean just because you don't make that mistake again, you're necessarily going to succeed? I don't think so. I think there's an infinite number of ways to make a mistake. I mean, heck, ask Edison and his light bulb. It took him 1,000 ways to figure out how to do it. But he was looking for the success. And likewise, Colonel Sanders took 1,009 times to sell his chicken recipe to somebody. Okay, so those aren't infinite, but 1,000 is enough. You know, there's 1,000 different ways that it doesn't work and a few ways that do. I would start focusing on looking to see my successes and think, what did I do to succeed? How do I make it? When I succeeded, what did I do differently? What did I stop doing? Who was there? Who wasn't there? What were the circumstances? And really look at, how did I succeed here? Because it's like picking a direction to go with anything. You're like, you're sailing a boat, flying an airplane, driving a car, walking down the road. Let's say it's north, to keep it simple. The direction I'm going is north. That is 1 degree, and the other 359 don't matter. So if I don't go south, don't go west, don't go east, does that tell me where I really want to go? No. It's just 4 compass points where I'm not going. Focus on the one where you do want to go and everything else doesn't matter. So what inspired me to write the book was these 10 things on, you know, I happen to know who the guy was, and he didn't write the real one down that killed his business, which was the people didn't get along. But that's another subject. But I wrote down, hell, I'll write down 10 ways to succeed in business. And by the time I finished my 10 lists, I had 20. And I thought, you know, I'm just going to keep talking here, and I just wrote it into a book. And the 20 reasons at the end are actually at the end of the book. But I wrote down all these different ideas of ways that I analyzed my successes. I looked at my mistakes and how I turned the mistake into a success and said, here's where this went. Here's where it started. In fact, here's sort of a consciousness lesson, for example, in the idea of selling. You know, what if people actually wanted to buy? What if I presumed people wanted to buy? I mean, look at investors. These guys invest for a living. They are praying to their God every single day that somebody please walk in the door with something I can invest in that would make $1 zillion. They're not sitting there thinking, oh, great, here comes another entrepreneur with some crackpot idea that's a stupid thing that I'm going to have to throw them out. No, they're like, please, please, show me a dog and pony show with somebody who's got something I can write a check for $1 zillion to that I can turn into a, you know, 10x zillion dollar return on investment. That's a complete shift in consciousness in the approach. And so that was just one chapter. And so there's a whole bunch of things like that where, like, whoa, what if you look through the other end of the telescope from all this crap we learned in our childhood and in life and we've heard on TV and seen and watched people do and people we've worked for and just did it, you know, in another way. And that's really where Business Black Belt comes from.
Now, that's a great story, Berg. And I think that a lot of people would be well served in taking that to heart. I think also the idea that learning, you know, how to pivot when you run into a particular situation that may not be playing out exactly the way that you thought it might. But I think that that plays perfectly into your thoughts as well. So what are some examples, Burke, of building a conscious business?
Well, I think, you know, it depends on what you're conscious of. You know, I think of like flying an airplane, you know, and if all of a sudden I'm conscious of a vibration somewhere, I'm thinking, uh-oh, what does that mean? And so likewise in building a business, you know, what might be the purpose of the business? Like in my case, you know, I made the Biz Plan Builder because, you know, what I did is I saw people with some really great business ideas, but the business plan, my kind of operating definition of a business plan really is a comprehensive logical proposal to, you know, explaining what your business does and what it's about to people who can support you, whether it's work with you, partner with you, invest in you, you know, sell for you, whatever that is. And so it's like a movie script. It's like sheet music. I mean, good luck going into a music studio and having the musicians play what you want to play if you don't have at least a chart for them to read from to know what's the chord progression, what key we're playing in, you know, kind of a thing. And so a conscious business likewise is, part of it is, you know, it's attracting the people that you want to work with. I mean, heck, we're entrepreneurs. You know, part of the reason we don't want to work for some of these companies we've worked for is because we don't want to work. We want to work with people that we want to work with now, and now we can. So you're conscious of the people you hire. I can go into a long, you know, another rabbit hole on that. Conscious of the kind of customers you want to help. Can you help these people? You know, are you in position to do that? Do you have the wherewithal? Do you have access to the resources that you'd need to do that? So you're conscious of the resources that you have. So like awareness, consciousness goes hand in hand with awareness. What are you aware of, kind of a thing? And so, you know, you've got the customers you're going to help, people are going to help you do it, the resources you need to do it with. You've got the systems in place to keep the business, you know, give you the feedback, like what your product does, gives you the feedback on, like, what is my QuickBooks accounting telling me here, you know, kind of a thing about my business. And what corrections do I need? What course corrections do I need to make? Part of being conscious is, you know, like a guided missile. Like bring a guided missile into consciousness conversation. But a guided missile, not by definition, but just in reality, is pretty much off course 99.9% of the time. Now, it knows fundamentally where it's going, but it's constantly correcting. It's like a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right, a little bit lower, a little, constantly correcting that. And that's where it's conscious of where it's going, but it's also conscious that it's going off track. It brings itself back. So part of building a conscious business is being able to recognize when you're on track or off track. And, you know, avoiding bright, shiny objects that are off to the side of the road. Like, ooh, that looks like a really good thing over there. But wait, that's not my business, you know. So all of us with ADD need a good plan and a conscious business is staying focused on most important things that need to be done, your priorities. So priorities, my business got in trouble way back when because I was all over the place, even though I'm the guy with the business plan. I went back to my business plan, I rejiggered my priorities and said, okay, this has got to be done first. Next has got to be done second. The next thing has got to be done third. I got no business doing anything else except those things, because these things are the things that I've said, you know, are the most important to me to be done based on some feedback from my people in the system. And that's really, I think, one of the larger overarching components of a conscious business is the feedback mechanisms and systems you build to keep it on track and keep it going, keep it from getting distracted from things. If the distraction really is worthy of a pivot, that's another rabbit hole.
And Bert, kind of like a slight continuation of Fred's question, are there a couple of companies that you kind of admire that you think are good examples?
What comes to mind immediately is Patagonia. You know, I always love Patagonia because, you know, it started out with a founder who is, you know, he's got his own blacksmith shop, a guy who hangs on, you know, you've heard of Patagonia clothing, jackets, climbing gear, all that kind of stuff around Ventura, California. And, you know, Yvon Chouinard is a guy who's out hanging on a rock face on a cliff, you know, using his own hardware. He made this stuff. His life depends on his creation. So he's very conscious of what it takes to make a pecan or whatever it is in rock climbing world, you know, that you need to have. He's also very conscious of what it takes to be comfortable, to be warm, to be wearing functional clothing, and building a company full of people who love doing that stuff so everybody gets it. You know, another example is Howard Schultz of Starbucks. It's an interesting read, especially for every entrepreneur should read this because it's quite a story. And he talks about the real takeaway I'll share with you is in about the middle of the book. He talks about, he says, you know, what I discovered was the kind of people at Starbucks have to have a passion for coffee and the coffee experience. Plain and simple, passion for coffee and the coffee experience. That drives everything. And everybody needs to be aligned at least on those two points to be effective working at Starbucks. So it's that kind of stuff in building a conscious business where you hire people who really already have that going on, and you look for that in the people you partner with. You look for that in your investors. This is where your so-called smart money comes from. Who's done a business like this? Who loves a business like this? If I was Howard Schultz, I would want investors who have a passion for coffee and the coffee experience, because they're going to understand what you're doing and why. And when it comes to making a profit, the conversations are about, okay, how can we still have a passion for coffee and the coffee experience and still have a profitable business, deliver the service, deliver the product for less than it costs us and enjoy a profit on this thing? I'm trying to think of others. Southwest Airlines, you know, conscious business. I mean, you know, they did a number of things right. They looked around and said, why should we use a whole bunch of different kinds of airplanes? Let's just use Boeing 737s. You know, keep it simple. You know, keep it simple to get on the plane, get off the plane. Everything about the service is simple. And they skyrocketed to wild success. So there's another variation of a conscious business. I could go on, I suppose.
Well, and Burke, you have in your business, and in addition to the biz plan builder, you have a lot of other tools that you make available to people to help them build that kind of business. So do you want to tell us a little bit about all the other or some of the other aspects of your new software?
Well, yeah, thanks for asking that. Well, yeah, I started out with a business plan, you know, really to help people with their ideas get funded and get their business going. And really what I want people to do all the things you can do that don't cost money, because the question comes up with investors, well, how do you get an investor to write a check sooner, faster? And really the only thing that I've found so far is that really you've got to show that you're doing this with or without them. And you're doing all the things that don't cost money. So the investor sees you and they think, well, this train's leaving the station. I want to be on it because this person building this company is going to do it. And I want to be part of that. So now that's started. So you think about in marketing in terms, I don't know where this study came from or where this information came from or somebody made it up, but the idea is that it costs roughly 5 times as much to find a new customer and sell them the first thing as it costs to go to an existing customer and sell them your next thing. Or put another way, it costs 20% to sell an existing customer your next product as it costs to go find an entirely new customer and start from scratch and sell them something to begin with. Okay, hold that thought. So now, you got the business plan. What's next? Well, we've got a marketing plan, which picks up where the business plan is off. The idea there is to help people see all the marketing pieces first. There's a recent study I read about it in Harvard Business Review that talks about if people can see all the options side by side, like all the resumes side by side, versus going through one at a time and trying to sort out which one's which, you can make a much better decision by seeing all these things side by side. So rather than going a church barbecue and hearing all about Facebook marketing and doing everything into Facebook and not realizing there's a whole bunch of puzzle pieces you can look at on the table of all these different marketing options that can work together, that's what Marketing Builder does, is help you sort that out. Follow that up with Publicity Builder. Now that you've got your marketing plan and strategy in place, how do you go out and build the bloggers to write about you and publish you and say good things about your business? On a different channel, there's hiring. We've got job descriptions. Most people don't have job descriptions, unfortunately. They really don't know what it is they're supposed to be doing day to day. Worse, the job descriptions you have, the are just bullet points. I number them and prioritize them. So of all the things you need to do day to day is these are your most important priorities. In fact, I take this a step further and say, what's your vision? What's your mission? What are your priorities? What are the problems you need to do? What does success look like in this job? So all of that should be defined. We've done that 700 different job descriptions. And an employee policy manual. You know, I hate to say this, but you know what? The according to the Society of Human Resources Managers, the average employee lawsuit costs $150,000. Now, can you imagine? Multiply 250,000 times the number of people you have, and you are staring down the barrel of a cataclysmic, catastrophic, you know, extinction-level business-killing liability. And so if you had – now, what we've done is we've taken 200 of these policies and procedures, documented them in plain English. So – and it's, you know, it's all done like, you know, you see most employee handbooks, but I think we've taken it several steps further, made it super easy for you to edit these, and everything fundamentally works the same way. So you're always – open a document, you can edit it, save it, combine it into manuals, and everything works the same way. And that's what our new dashboard really enables, in making that easy. So the employee manual is covered. The next after that is a safety plan, your safety training and policies. OSHA could knock on your door and say, hi, we're here to pay a courtesy visit. Well, they're going to come in and look at you if you have machines, you have machine guarding around them. Do you have the red and white or yellow tape on the floor to keep people away from them? Are you telling people don't wear neckties around the drill press? And if you don't have some kind of safety plan in place, they can fine you. And the last number I heard was like, it's off $7,000. And they're looking for all kinds of things that are wrong with your business to fine you with. And then, of course, both of these things, the employee manual and the safety plan, have a letter that employees sign that say, I've read this manual. I'm responsible for what's in it. I'm responsible for complying what it says. So then when they go to sue you, because that seems to be the next thing to do, people can make a lot of money in this country by suing people, Donald's about their coffee, you know. So to prevent that, you send over to their lawyer when they sue you, you send a copy of the letter the employee signed. You send a copy of the employee manual, the safety, say, hey, this guy said he did this. You violated this policy. You violated this procedure. We did everything we could do. You know, what do you want to do now? What that really does, I believe, is demoralizes the lawyer who's probably going to take this case on contingency to realize that this is going to be more trouble than it's worth. I'll never win this case, or if I do, it's going to cost me too much to win it. Forget about it. And they tell their client to go get another job and, you know, go away. That's the idea. So that said, we've got a collection of sample contracts. We've got a whole bunch of spreadsheets to help people do math. I'm not really a math person myself, so I build these spreadsheets to answer these complicated questions. What's the lifetime value of a customer? Unfortunately, most people's lifetime value of a customer's calculations never seem to include the probability that this customer is going to refer another customer. You know what happens when you add that number to it? The lifetime value of a customer skyrockets, and it also tells you the only real reason someone's going to refer your company or product to somebody else is if they love you, love your company, you took good care of them, they like the product, and your customer service better be spot on 24/7, because that's why they're going to tell other people about your company and why it's great. So a whole dashboard full of tools to help people get it right and make it, because, again, I want the entrepreneurs who've got these innovations that are going to save humanity to succeed all the way, and you can't afford $250,000 lawsuits and $7,000 OSHA fines and other things that go wrong with your business, because that's what kills them. And that's what we want to prevent. That's what we want to help, you know, people succeed from the get-go and get it right the first time.
You know,
absolutely.
Bert, as you were talking, and we've had some conversations in the past, that business planning and mindsets of profitability and cash, they're not a one-time event. They're a living, ongoing entity. Could you talk to about why it should be living and what that really means and the mindset associated with that?
I immediately get a visual of the guy who is driving his Winnebago down the highway, puts it on cruise control, and gets up and goes in the back to make a sandwich. Now, how does that can only end badly, right? You know, just because it's on cruise control, you're on the highway, you're in a Winnebago, doesn't mean the driver can get up and go in the back and make a sandwich. So it's just going to make this, oh, I just get the chills figuring, watching, imagining what's going to happen there. And so, yeah, it's great when it's set up. You know, you got the cruise control, you know, but you still got to drive the car. You still have to, you know, stay in touch. Even when I flew my airplane, I put it on autopilot. Autopilot's great. You know, holds the wings level, keeps you headed right, keeps you at the right altitude. But that doesn't mean I go to sleep. You know, in fact, falling asleep was probably my biggest fear, you know, but I'm sitting there watching the instruments. I'm looking where I'm going, and I'm turning knobs, talking to air traffic control. It's an ongoing process. There is no escape from that, at least not on this planet. And you just have, this is back to conscious. You've got to stay conscious, like awake. You've got to stay in the driver's seat. You've got to have your hands on the wheel. You've got to, as one of my people said way back when, you've got to inspect what you expect. Just because people have a job description and employee policies and things like that, you have got to read them. You've got to understand what they are. You've got to follow up with the people and make sure they're doing their job. There's a lot to do, you know, and there's no escaping it. Even if you've hired people to do it for you, you've got to stay in touch with them to make sure they're doing what you want to do. Take their feedback, make decisions. You know, this is why your plan is so important, because you've got a fundamental movie script that you're following here, a music that you're following here. Sure, people can improvise and jam, you know, take their guitar solo from time to time, which is great. But at the same time, the guitar solo has got to be in the same key as the tune. So, you know, that's another thing, but you get the idea. We've all heard guitar solos, and so there's ones that are better and ones that are worse. But nevertheless, you've got to stay conscious of what's going on. You've got to, when you're playing in the band, you've got to listen to what the other players are doing, and you're all playing fundamentally the same thing. And so there's lots of metaphors between flying, driving, surfing, traffic, and business that all go together, and it's no mystery or accident that it all works fundamentally the same way.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And as you know, Burke, that's exactly the same approach that we take in our financial analysis and predictive management. But it is all a part of the bigger picture, right? You have to have targets, you have to have structure, and you have to have a system for evaluating and adjusting your course. So that's fantastic. But, and I know that your tools are tremendous. So I think I appreciate you giving us all that information.
I'd like to say I've been taught that when speaking with media, one needs to be short-winded, but sometimes it can't help it.
No, that was great. I thought that was excellent.
It is, and that's why we're here, Bert, because, you know, after – how many years it is again that you've had your business planning software out? And that's amazing enough. Is it over 20 years or?
Yeah. Well, I launched the first version of it back in 1988, and it's just evolved constantly. I mean, I go to meetings, I pitched venture capitalists, investors, friends and family. I think friends and family are probably the toughest pitch, even though that's the ones you start with, but that's where you learn how to do it. And the plans evolved. And, you know, even calling it a plan, you know, is it an elaborate brochure? It is a plan, because it really helps you organize your thinking. I even got in trouble with my business some 15 years ago because I, you know, went off track a little bit. And I went back to my business plan. And just thought, I'm going to read my plan. I haven't looked at this in a while. If I was about to toss in the towel, I was about to be the mercenary who's going to give up because the money wasn't looking good and I just wanted to do something different. And I looked at my business plan and it really – rekindled my whole appreciation for, wait a minute, you got something here. You've got a lot of successful customers. This thing works great. Get your head back in the game and sort this out. I made a few changes to the plan, but it really re-inspired me to continue doing it. And so I've now forgotten the question you asked me, but, you know, it's just important to really organize what you're doing and stay, keep your head in the game.
Well, yeah, to be in software this many years and still being a leader in the field and touching, you know, over 2 million entrepreneurs, you know, I want to hear those things. So I appreciate it. And I know mindset is so, so important. And I love the quote by Albert Einstein about no problem can be solved at the same level of consciousness that created it. How do we keep innovation going, and how do we make that shift from problem to solutions, or how would you express that in the context here?
Yeah, I love that, because I mean, I think a lot of people use it in terms of, okay, well, we've got to replace the person because this person over here is at a certain level of consciousness that caused the problem. Let's get a new person who has a different level of consciousness, whatever level means, and they're going to solve the problem. Well, I also say that, you know, I look at my own self, and I've upped my level of consciousness, meaning, you know, like back to my initial definition of what I talked about consciousness is really, how can I clear out or rethink all of these learned helplessness things that I learned as a kid? Well, I would say I just learned. I mean, we all have stuff happens to us, and most psychologists, therapists will tell you that most of your issues can be traced back to your family of origin, what your dad did or didn't do, said or didn't say, what your mom said or didn't say, were you molested by somebody, you know, did they drink, you know, all these things that happen that go on, dad gets fired, comes home, you know, whatever. And we, you know, oftentimes we're told that children, at least our generation, children are seen and not heard. You wouldn't understand. I'm not going to tell you, mostly because they didn't want to tell us. I think because maybe there was some embarrassment around it, or they couldn't answer it themselves. So what do? We come up with our own answer, explain it to ourselves and go, okay, that must be it. That becomes the problem. Those explanations, and as another psychologist I know talked about, he said, you know, those things really aren't our, people call it our baggage, our SHIT, or whatever else is, oh, I got all this stuff. And he says, no, actually, those at the time, for a five-year-old explaining to themselves about their alcoholic parents, whatever that means, is an act of genius. The kid, you as a child, explained these things to yourselves and solved your own problem, learned to live with whatever the issue was, and that was actually an act of genius in solving that issue for yourself at the time. The problem becomes, here we are 50 years later, still applying that idea to our life. And the problem is we need to revisit these things. And this is, you know, call your favorite therapist, you know, really. And that's what their business is about, is enabling you to, like, kind of not just live your life in the rearview mirror, but a lot of things that you're doing is done at that level of consciousness that created it. I am blown away at how things I was still doing that I thought of as a 5 or 6 year old, you know, that level of consciousness is still, I'm trying to solve it, still thinking like a 5 year old. Now I'm 60 something. I can say, okay, you know, I'm at a whole different level of consciousness because I've visited many of these things and I don't think at that same level of consciousness. And therefore I'm able to solve a whole bunch of problems that are not at that level. So really, one's got to really rethink your learned helplessness. Every idea you have, every time you catch yourself in a pattern like, why does this always happen to me? How come I'm always the guy? How come people always, you know, betray me and go do something else? How come people leave and go do something else? How come I keep attracting women that remind me of my mother? How come women say, you remind me of my father? I'm thinking, ah, you know, well, that's, you know, how is that? How do these patterns recur? Well, because you haven't really revisited what issue that you haven't resolved with daddy or mommy yet that are keep coming around. Here's a great example of how this can get you in business. Statistically, demographically, most investors are middle-aged men. Just a fact. Now, that's changing. Typically, they've been middle-aged men who are typically white, and that's changing. So there's more people of color, more women with money, all that. So it's evolving in a good way. However, for those of us who, you know, are white and we run into the, walk into the venture capitalist office and there's all these middle-aged men, what's going to trigger? Daddy. So if you can't ask daddy, I did this with a bunch of college students recently. I was telling you about this and I said, okay, so just for example, I'm going to teach you some Spanish here. Dos cervezas, por favor, which means two beers, please. Repeat after me. And they would say, okay, they could all do dos cervezas, por favor. Okay, great. Now, repeat after me. Daddy, can I have $1,000? And they all looked at me like, you know, like, what? You know, I said, look, you just said dos cervezas, por favor, right? Just say the words. Daddy, can I have $1,000? They couldn't do it. They wouldn't do it. I said, so, you know, how are you going to walk into a venture capitalist office with middle-aged men who ostensibly are the same age as your daddy was when you can't ask him for $1,000 as a teenager or younger? How are you going to ask him for, I need $10 million to make this business go? So there is a potential trap if you haven't addressed it. Or you can walk in and go, wow, this guy reminds me of my dad. Hey, Dad, can I have 10? Hey, John, I'd like $1 million to start this company and just do it anyway. But then again, you know, there's no problem can be solved in the same level of consciousness that created it. You got to up your consciousness. You've got to look at the consciousness that created the problem so you can, you know, let go of that and in that moment rethink, how do I want to look at this issue now instead of creating a problem with old five-year-old me thinking to how does me 60-year-old look at this with as more mature as I see things happen. And when you do that, you'll see whole patterns in your life just vanish because you realize, oh, you know, that all came from that idea I got that I made up as a five-year-old that I was applying over and over again. No wonder that pattern kept recurring. And the pattern pretty much stops. It might come back.
Yeah, that's a little scary, isn't it, Bert?
It's more than a little scary. Sorry, go ahead. I mean, I've been looking at this kind of thing for 37 years. And what is scary is like, how prolific I was as a child at making stuff up, you know.
That's great. And all the information, Bert, is just tremendous information. I think it's going to be incredibly helpful for a lot of people. Unfortunately, we're coming up to the end of our time here. So I guess, you know, do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to leave the audience with in addition to everything you've already given them?
What can I say that would be short and sweet, unlike everything else I've said? A final thought. Well, yeah, you know, I would say that,
go for it.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, at some level, you know, back to this whole idea that the theme of our show here is conscious business. So I think by now, after what I've said, you can start to see that what happens in your business at many levels is going to be a reflection of you. Your consciousness, your level of consciousness, your thinking behind it, where you're coming from, who you are in this business. You know, look at Steve Jobs. I mean, here's a guy built one of the world's most valuable company. Now, I would say that, you know, looking back on consciousness with him, you know, I haven't said this in public before, but, you know, he was adopted twice. And you read his book. You can imagine usually what goes along with adopted is given up for. Why would somebody give you up? Well, because you're probably not good enough, which would explain why Steve would say, this has got to be an insanely great product. Now, what I'm making is really good and works for you. Would I say it's insanely great? I don't feel driven to say that. I think it is, but nevertheless, he's like, it's insanely great, and if you're not helping me do it, you're gone, you know, because he's going to reject you before you reject him. And so you can see how Apple really was built around Steve Jobs' consciousness, for better or worse. Unfortunately for Steve, that same consciousness that built the company also killed him, which is a whole other rabbit hole of, you know, the thinking behind dis-ease and how that can our body, the disease really is the messenger of your thinking. So you don't really fight disease, just like you don't shoot the messenger. You look at it and go, what is this disease telling me? So in his case, what, you know, anyway. But, you know, so how is the business a reflection of you? And again, you've also got to, you know, keep changing your perception of yourself, keep addressing your consciousness, noticing the patterns in your life and, you know, work on that kind of stuff and recognizing, getting the feedback on your business, feedback from your customers, build in the feedback loops and have the systems in place. See what the business is telling you. I mean, that's what your Profit Beacon does. You know, when you showed me this, you know, we're all kind of cahoots here and marketing our different stuff, but it all goes together, which is why this all makes sense. You know, your Profit Beacon is telling you, or telling me, the business owner, what's my business? What's QuickBooks telling me about my business that I need to be aware of, that I need to adjust? And so you really got to stay aware of your own thinking, stay conscious of yourself and your thinking and your business. What are the dials on the dashboard telling you? And this is the part, because you can see dials and go into denial about that, but you got to say, you know, like when I was learning to fly instruments, if the dial on the dashboard is telling me my wings are banked, I can pretty much bet without looking out the window that my wings are banked, and to believe that more than whatever I feel in my butt, you know, because it's a gravitation. Anyway, it's flying, but, you know,
right,
instrument training.
Right.
It's all about believing the instruments and not yourself is the point.
Exactly.
And so really, it's about your consciousness, and that's really where that would be the place. That would be the furthest place upstream that everything else flows from in your business, in your selling, in your product, in your finances, in everything. It's where are you coming from with it?
And Bert, we're right there now. How can our listeners find out more about Business Power Tools? And is there anything special you wanted to let them know about today?
Well, please come to businesspowertools.com. It's plain English, businesspowertools, all one word basically, .com. We do have a dashboard. There's links to it on there. It'll show you how you can, you know, write your business plan, employee manual, contracts, lots of letters, lots of different documents you need. The whole thing really is helping you say what, you know, what to say and how to say it. You know, the thing about the positive language, like when, for example, I see a lot of letters end with things like, don't hesitate to contact me with questions and concerns. Well, listen to that. We've thrown hesitate, concerns into the picture. How about a sentence that would say something like, please feel free to contact me with your ideas and questions and ideas, which to me is a much more positive way of looking at it. And that's really what we've gone to a lot of effort and consciousness, if you will, in our systems to make you sound as good as you possibly can, and to put into the so-called ether here, the space between us, what you want to have there, said there. You don't say things like, don't think of an elephant. Now we've got an elephant in the room because I said, don't think of one. And so you want to be careful of the words you use, so only the words in between us are what you want to be there. That makes sense. That would be the basis of my forthcoming TED Talk that I'd like to do. Anyway, so again, it's your consciousness. It's about being, how can I help you really run the most conscious business you can? And that's what all the businesspowertools.com templates, apps, videos, spreadsheets are all about helping you do.
Thanks for that, Burke. And before we do the official close, Fred Parrish, our co-host today, his company, The Profit Experts, is also the sponsor of this program. Fred, could you let people know at least something about The Profit Experts and anything special you want them to be aware of?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Robert. The Profit Experts is focused specifically on helping small companies get big business intelligence. And it's about your financial management, really translating accounting data into operational intelligence and creating that predictive management capability to basically say, we're operating a certain way today, and if we do two or three things, we'll get a different set of outcomes. If we do another two or three things, we'll get a different set of outcomes, and maybe we combine the two and we'll get a third set. Which of the three is the better path to go? And all of what we do, both our virtual CFO service and our Profit Beacon software application, which really is an automated CFO, is designed to give that business owner and their staff the ability to predict outcomes before they actually ever even pull the trigger on a decision. So it's all about setting your targets, as Burke said, getting the plan in place, following the plan, testing the plan, looking at your results, and then making decisions about what changes need to be made in order to either stay on the plan or adjust the plan to get to a better outcome.
Thanks, Brett. That was really helpful. So, again, you can learn more about Burke Franklin at businesspowertools.com. We really loved having you on today. We filled in, you know, who would think that business and consciousness we could fill in an hour or so productively. Thanks again for being on the show, Burke. It was a pleasure.
Well, thanks, Robert. And I appreciate being here.
And thank you, Fred.
Yeah,
for,
it's good talking with you, Burke.
Yeah, and this is our first show in a new series. We'll let you know more. Keep looking for it as we expand how we get out there to social media. And you can find these shows on successsolutionsinternational.com, where they'll be archived for your listening, and soon to also be on theprofitbeacon.com, where you'll be able to listen to the programs again or share them with your friends. So thank you so much. From Success Solutions Live, I'm Robert Browning, and we're wishing you 2018 to be the best year ever. Thank you so much. Any last moment of thought, any last quick comment here from you, Burke, a one-minuter, just any last thought?
One-minuter, any last thought? Let me think. Let's see. Well, I think one thing would help when you're talking to people on the phone is stand. Standing gives you more power, I think, than sitting. I'm standing now. I was sitting before. I don't know if they can hear any difference. There's just a lot of things to do. It's just it's ongoing. I think the whole idea of putting something on cruise control, as much as we would love to, you know, get to a place where you can just set it and forget it, there's no such thing. And I think that's, you just have to, you know, bite the bullet on that one. Hey, that's been kind of a weird term, bite the bullet. What does that even mean? So, I think really listen to the words you use. Really, that would be the next thing is, Listen to the words you think with. If you say things like "go for broke," that's my favorite one to show. Like "go for broke," really? Is that what you want to do? Or could you say "I'm all in on this thing"? Because going for broke, I don't think that's what any of us are intending to do.
Yeah.
Although I hear it a
lot.
Don't
think you want to go there, right?
Say, no, we do not. So hey, that's one example of saying, being conscious of what you say, what words you put out in the universe. If you're a praying kind of person and God's listening and you say "go for broke," God's up there going, "Okay, you know, be careful what you wish for." And so listen to the words you use in your own head. Listen to the words you use with people. Listen to the words you write and think about, what picture am I painting? What am I creating? What am I leading people to think? What images am I putting in our conversation here consciously?
Perfect. Burke Franklin, businesspowertools.com. Thank you so much. It's been a great show, and thank you, Fred.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Burke.
Thanks, Fred.
We'll see you soon in about 2 weeks on another show, and that show will be with Patrick Bielow on business execution and the planning associated with it. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.